Hey, you guys, it's Tomes of Terror once again. Got another really, really good one. Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this one. This is a great fucking book. Okay, so this is the 2014 novel No One Gets Out Alive by Adam Neville. Now, what happened with this one was that I kept seeing this shit turning up on pretty much every BookTube show, like, on YouTube that I watch. Everybody was just raving about this book. He's written a bunch of other novels prior to this, but this is the first one that I had read because I was like, I read like a slight synopsis and I was like, no, don't tell me. And so I just wanted to like go into it completely blind, which I would recommend because I really didn't have any idea what to expect, and I like that better. Like, I kind of got the idea that this is sort of like a haunted housey kind of thing, but it's really, it is, but it has a lot of other kind of stuff going on too. And I liked that I didn't really see where it was going. However, that said, I'm not gonna spoil the entire plot or anything like that, but I am gonna talk about some stuff, where the plot goes, some of the things that are going on in the story that maybe you might want not want to know like ahead of time. So if you haven't read it, then obviously, you might want to go read it first, or if you don't care, you can just listen to the shit and do whatever you want to do, man. It's like, it's your life. Now, there's one thing I will say. This book is long, okay? And that doesn't bother me. I'm just telling you ahead of time. It's about 620 something pages. That's the reason actually that I did Night of the Mannequins by Stephen Graham Jones last week, because that book was so short. That I wanted, because I wanted to have time to read this one, you know what I mean? So I wanted to give myself like an extra week. And it actually didn't take me as long to finish this as I thought it would, because it was a really like compelling story. I have seen some reviewers say that they wish it had been shorter by like 100 or 200 pages, because they thought maybe it dragged a little bit in the middle. I can see that criticism, but it didn't really bother me to any great degree. It didn't seem that long to me. I was pretty invested in the characters. I was pretty interested to see what was going on, so it didn't bother me. So your mileage may vary, but I'm just pointing out that some reviewers, even the reviewers that really, really liked it, said, maybe 100, 200 pages could have been trimmed out of it, and it would have been even better. But I don't know. Like I said, everybody's mileage is going to vary on that. It didn't seem long to me, but so what is this story about? So Adam Neville is a British novelist. As I said, this came out in 2014. I haven't read any of his other ones, but I probably will after reading this one, and I liked this one so much. So this is set in Birmingham, England. Now our main character is named Stephanie Booth. And she's this young woman. I guess she's, 20 in her early 20s or whatever. I guess she's kind of been through some shit where her mom died when she was pretty young, and then her dad ended up marrying this harridan who hated her. And then when her dad died, the loon stepmother basically kicked her out of the house. So for a little while, like I said, they don't go too much into her past, but there's just kind of like, that's just sort of the setup. And I guess she had a boyfriend named Ryan. They'd been together a couple years, but then they kind of broke up. There wasn't like any big thing there. It's like she just kind of wanted to make her way on her own. So she decides to move away from her hometown of Stoke and all her friends and her ex-boyfriend and her horrible stepmother, and she's gonna make her own way in Birmingham. Now, probably unwisely, like I can see why you'd want to do that. And fresh start and all that. But she doesn't really have much money to her name. She's been working for a temping agency, and shit's tough all over, and she hasn't really been able to get anything long term. It's just kind of like a few days of work here and there, and it's just kind of shitty jobs like call centers and giving out food samples at supermarkets and shit like that. So she's really trying to scrape together some money, get a job and everything like that. So she's looking for a cheap place to live. And she stumbles across this ad for a house at 82 Edge Hill Road that is renting out rooms to girls only. Now, renting out rooms at £40 a week, which is super, super cheap. So she's pretty jazzed about this, and she goes to see the place, and it's kind of this creepy old Victorian house that's really seen much better days. And she is kind of like, well, the room seems okay. She's like, it's a little bit dirty. It's a little bit old. It's a little bit dated. But the landlord, this dude named Knacker McGuire, he's kind of sleazy a little bit, but she's kind of in a jam. It's like she can't really afford anything, better than this, and she really, it isn't getting much of anything from the temp agency, and she really needs a place to stay. She's sort of on her own. So she kind of seems to quickly, overlook any bad things and give him the deposit money and, 1 or 2 weeks in advance, or a month in advance, I think she gives him, because he's sitting there saying, "Oh, it's going to be fine. We're doing this place all up and it'll be so much better. We're going to modernize it," and all this other kind of crap. So she moves in. Now, pretty much from her first night in this shithole, she realizes that she has made a terrible, terrible mistake. Not just because Knacker McGuire, the landlord, is kind of creepy and not so much, he's not so much creepy as in, "Hey, I'm gonna come in and paw through your underwear drawer" kind of thing, but he just seems real shady. You know what I mean? And he's like a chav. Like, you know what I mean? That's how he came across to me. Like, very much just kind of this chav who was always kind of like, he's very arrogant, he's very condescending, but he's really like trashy. You know what I mean? So he's that type of dude. He says it's his parents' house, that it's his mother's house. They've died, they've inherited it, him and his cousin, and they're doing it up and all this other kind of shit, which turns out, spoiler alert, to be a lie. But that's what he tells her. So the first night she's in this house, immediately, like, some creepy, creepy shit starts happening. She starts hearing, like, something that sounds like plastic or polythene, like, crinkling under the bed. She hears what sounds like women crying, coming from, like, behind the fireplace, or maybe it's in the next room. And, she hears a woman crying or a woman talking, like, and it seems like it's coming out of the bathroom drain. So she keeps hearing, like, all this creepy ass noise. And it's like, at first, she's not really sure if it's, like, supernatural, because Knacker, the landlord, has told her, it's like, "Yeah, we're gonna rent out, all these rooms to some girls. There's other girls living here," or he's kind of sketchy about, it's like, there's either other girls already living here or there's gonna be other girls living here. Now, she hasn't seen anybody else. If there's like a shared bathroom and a shared kitchen, and I think it's like 3 floors or something like that. The ground floor is blocked off, you can't go down there. But the top 2 floors are kind of like, there's a shared bathroom, and then the Knacker and his cousin, who comes into it later, I think they live on the top. But so she's not really sure if there's already some other girls living in there, and she thinks somebody, maybe needs help, but, she knocks on the wall or the door or whatever, and nobody answers. And then, like, some more overtly supernatural shit starts happening, where she feels somebody, like, sitting on the bed, and she turns the light on real quick and there's nobody there. She starts seeing shadows, like hearing footsteps, like that kind of crap. I mean, fair play to her. The first night that she endures this, and she doesn't really get much sleep, and she has kind of a temp assignment the next morning. So she's kind of like, "Okay, I have to get the fuck out of here, because I'm not, sleeping in this room." She's like, "I can't sleep in there. There's all kind of like haunting shit going on. It's terrifying. And I'm not having it." So she goes to Knacker and tries to get her deposit back. And at this point, you get a thing where he's basically holding the deposit money over her head, because, she has only had a couple days of work. She doesn't really have any money, and she can't get another room until this douche gives her money back. And he knows that. He knows that she's desperate, because he's been sort of spying on her. So he knows that he kind of has her by the short and curlies. Another criticism that I saw of this was that Stephanie seemed a little bit like too passive, or she didn't really, just run out of the place screaming as soon as, shit started to go sideways, because shit does go very, very sideways in this house, like in many more ways than you could probably imagine. But in a way, though, because it's not in the first person, but we're pretty much like inside her head the whole time. Like, it's limited third person. So you know what she's thinking and what she's going through. And in a way, like, I could see, yes, she was kind of passive. Yes, she was trying to be nice to people when maybe they didn't deserve it. But I could relate to her character because I'm a little bit like that. I've known some people that are kind of like that. You kind of want to try to make the best of the situation. She's like, look, I don't have any money. What am I supposed to do? Am I just supposed to sleep out on a bench? She didn't really have anybody she could call. She texts her ex-boyfriend at one point, like in the next town, and she's like, hey, can I crash on your couch or can I borrow some money or something? And he's with another girlfriend at this time, so he doesn't really want to get involved. So there's all this other kind of shit. Her friends don't really want to know and they're in another town anyway. So it's kind of, she's kind of stuck. So in a way, yeah, it's kind of easy to say, why don't you just run the fuck out of there? But she does kind of go through every scenario of like, what can I do? What can I do? So she just kind of keeps kicking it down the road. Like, well, when I get paid for my temp job at the end of this week, then I'll find another room. I only have to stay here for another 3 nights and there, or then maybe I can go find a hostel and then I can figure out what I can do from there. So it is like she's trying to make the best of the situation, but in a way, particularly because of her financial situation, because of her being in a town where she doesn't know anybody and she's really isolated, she doesn't really have a lot of choices. And then it's almost too kind of like Knacker is sort of manipulating her, holding the, promise of giving her deposit back, like, over her head. And then, she's like, oh, I'll give you a better room, because she's like, I'm not sleeping in that fucking haunted-ass room anymore. So he gives her a better one. But then he just, he does shit, like, he'll do that, and, like, he'll pretend to be nice to her. But then later on down the line, it's like, oh, well, the rent for that was way higher, so now you owe me all this money. So he's doing that kind of crap. So the thing about this book that's so great is that there is supernatural elements threaded throughout the first probably two-thirds of the book, because this book is in two parts, which I'll get to in a minute. But there's supernatural elements threaded throughout in the sense that she keeps like hearing shit in this house, and eventually, well, it doesn't even take her that long. It's not even eventually, but she comes to the realization that these are ghosts. So the house is either haunted or she's going nuts, one of those two things. So she comes to that realization. But the thing about it is that the ghosts are almost like on the back burner for the first two thirds, just because the shit that's going on in real life in the house, like the real people, like Knacker McGuire and his cousin Fergal, the shit that they are doing is like worse than the ghosts, because these two vile, shitheaded dudes are just kind of like, and like I said, if this is going to be all kind of like plot spoilers and shit like that, so it's like, if you haven't read this book, then go read it and then come back. Like I said, I'm not going to spoil everything that happens in it, but it's a really hard book to talk about if you can't talk about what happens in it, like all of the different plot threads and everything. So there is ghost shit and haunting shit, like I said, at the beginning, but the two cousins, essentially what they're doing is they're trying to get women in there, and they're trying to run a brothel. So they're doing human trafficking, pretty much. So they bring in two girls at some point who know that they're going into prostitution, right? They know that they're going there to be sex workers. They're not happy about the living accommodations, because apparently Knacker had told them that it had all been done up and it was much nicer than it was. So they get there and they're like, what is this shithole? We don't want to live here. But, they came there to be prostitutes, so they knew what they were getting in for. Stephanie, it seems like they're trying to soft sell her into being a sex worker as well. So they're trying to get her into, so they're trying to like manipulate her. Now, Knacker is more like, even though he's a skeez, he's kind of more like the sales pitch kind of guy, but Fergal is more like the muscle. Like, he is just this big brutish, he's this super super tall, he's like 7 feet tall, he's like this freakishly, and he's all freakishly skinny and stuff, but he, they've all been in prison, they're just all these fucking shifty ass fucking characters. And it gets to a point where they're essentially trying to force her into prostitution. They're like, they're tying the girls in the house. They're like threatening to throw acid on their faces. They're doing all that kind of shit. So it's like, it's bad enough that this fucking house is haunted, right? But then all this other shit is going on too. And Stephanie gets to a point where, she tried to leave, but then there comes a point when it's like too late and she can't leave. So it's just this, the first like two thirds of it are really harrowing. And the thing about it, too, is that the two cousins, They seem to know something about the supernatural shit that's going on in the house, and the supernatural shit seems to be related to not only the brothel that they're trying to run nowadays, but also to the dude that used to live in the house, and maybe even the people that lived in the house before that, like when it was even built. So, as I said, this book is in two parts. The first two-thirds of it is set over Stephanie's 9 days in this house, which catalogs, so it's each kind of section is one day, like one long day. So it kind of talks about the haunting, how the haunting is ramping up, and then it's talking about how she just keeps getting in deeper and deeper, more and more like threatened by the cousins. And how they're essentially forcing her there, they lock her in and all these other kind of things. There's horrible. Right now, I'm going to say this is a very, very violent book. Like a lot of people get the shit beat out of them, and it's, pretty graphically described. There's a lot of rape in this. So if that's going to bother you, sure, this is not the book for you. I'm just saying that right now. So the first two-thirds is like that. And then at the end of the 9 days, when Stephanie escapes and gets out, and I won't spoil like how that all comes about or anything like that. But then, interestingly, it jumps ahead 3 years. Now, at this point, it was like the switch up was so jarring that it was almost like a whole new different story. So I will admit that when the second part started, like when after the time jump, for a second, I was just kind of like, well, wait, like what's going on here? You know what I mean? So it was kind of like it took me a few pages to kind of get into the swing of what was going on, because like the tone of it is a little bit different. You know what I mean? So it's almost kind of like it goes off in a different direction, sort of. But what happens after that is that so she escapes from this house. The cops come in, they have to, there are just bodies everywhere, and they excavate the property, they tear it down. It's all this other kind of stuff. It's this huge media sensation because of all the people that have been killed there, like over the past 100 years and all this other stuff. So what ends up happening is that 3 years later, she has basically sold her story. Like she wrote a book and it was made into a movie and all this stuff. So she actually got really rich, but she still wholeheartedly believes that the spirits in the house at 82 Edge Hill Road are still tormenting her. And in particular, it's not just the spirits of the people that died there, although it is that, but there's also kind of a force that is, I almost want to say it's like a folk horror type of thing. So it's like one of those like ancient, just I don't want to say witchcraft, but it's kind of like that. So the second part of the book is kind of her, and she's got a new identity and all, and she lives in this like massive this big farmhouse that's out in the middle of nowhere, and she has all these security guards and all this other stuff, because she's still like afraid because one of the dudes, she thinks is still looking for her, and she's also like still kind of tormented by all of the spirits of the victims and other people that died at the house, and by this force, this spirit, this being that seems to want to come after her. So the second part of the book, even though it's a lot different, I guess, tonally than the first part, the second part is much more concerned with the supernatural aspect. You know what I mean? Because like I said, the first part of the book is, it has supernatural, a lot of supernatural elements in it, because like I said, she's constantly hearing footsteps and hearing noises, and at some point she gets put down in the first, like the ground floor that's been closed off, and like all this horrible kind of fucking climactic thing happens, and she kind of figures out, tries to get a handle on what the hell is going on in this house and what Nacker and Fergal like know about it. But it's more, the first part of the book is much more about the human monsters and how they are, forcing her, how she got forced into this situation, and how she kind of finds her inner strength and try to get out of it. And then the second part is much more about the aftermath, like about what the media attention did to her, how nobody, you know, she told everybody about the supernatural aspects and stuff, and no one believed her. And, you know, so that kind of element comes into play as well. So you kind of get a thing between her and the person that is her, like her, you know, personal security guard. And they have to kind of battle this ancient being that is still after her. You know what I mean? Okay, so that's all. So that's what I'm going to say about that. So that's what this book is about. I mean, this was a really great, like, immersive book. One of the best things about this book is that even at the beginning part, like, while the supernatural stuff was just kind of on the margins, you know, the human horror was so potent. I mean, because I've been in situations like that where you had to, where you didn't have any money and you had to like move into this place and it was like kind of shitty and you just felt like you didn't really have any choices because you were so broke. And it's like, and this poor, and I felt so bad for this poor girl who was just trying to make the best of things. She was just trying to, you know, better her life. She's like, I want to, you know, live on my own. I'll get a job. I'll, you know, I'll find a nicer place to live. This place is only, it's kind of shitty, but it's only temporary. And she was so optimistic. And then it's just, as things just got suckier and suckier and suckier. I mean, to a degree that, like I said, you probably can't even imagine like how fucking horrible this shit got. And I just felt so, so bad for her. And then, so I really did like relate to her. I know that some people criticize and they're at the beginning, oh, she was too passive. She should have got the fuck out of there earlier. But, you know, it, I can totally see it's a totally realistic progression, you know, what ends up happening to her and how she ended up in that situation. And, you know, I think it's a little victim blamey to kind of say, oh, she should have done this, that, and the other thing. I know she's just a book character, but, you know, I'm just saying that you don't know what she would do in that situation. And I could totally see shit going down exactly this way if you were broke, if you didn't really have any other options for a place to live or any friends or any, you know, backup or anything like that. I can totally see shit happening, shit going down like this. And then adding on this horrific supernatural element, which makes everything like 100 times worse. And I just felt so, so bad for her. And so like, as the story goes on, you know, as the first 2/3 of the book goes on and she really kind of just finds that strength in her to like finally like fight back and just say, fuck it. You know, even if I get killed, I really need to fucking sort this shit out. And it's just really, really satisfying. So I think that was a really good, she has a really good character arc is what I'm saying. Now, as I said, it is a little jarring when you go from the first 2/3 of the book to the second, you know, after when it jumps ahead 3 years. But stick with it because there's like some really cool shit in that section as well. I think I like the first section better, but I did like that the second section kind of resolved what exactly this ancient being was that we were dealing with, what exactly had been going on in that house and had been going on there even before Knacker and Fergal like took it over. I liked that all that was resolved, even though I think that the first 2/3 of the book was probably like more compelling just because I liked the atmosphere of the house, because just the way Adam Neville described it, it's like you can almost fucking smell the place. You know what I mean? It's just, I could just picture him as this grimy, fucking nasty, disgusting place that's like never cleaned, and it's like this big gross ass like things of dust and mouse turds, and it was just like everything was disgusting and greasy and like everything. So it's like you could really just kind of like picture it in your mind. And like I said, I felt so bad for the main character because, you know, like I said, everybody's been broke and you had to like live somewhere that was really not ideal. And so I really kind of related pretty hard to her situation. And you know, I really liked like her character arc. But yeah, now this is a very long book. It is a commitment. As I said, some people complained that, you know, even if they liked it, were like, oh, it could have been a little bit shorter. I don't disagree. I think that's like that's subjective. To me, it didn't really seem very long. It only took me, you know, 2 or 3 days, you know, over a couple hours a day, like to read it. It didn't take me that long to read it. So it didn't seem all that long to me, but you know, your mileage may vary as always. But yeah, I mean, if this is how awesome his, other books are, which I've heard that, his other books are also quite awesome. He did one called, The House of Small Shadows, I think it was, that, has also gotten a lot of praise, which came out a year or two before this one. So I'll probably be checking that one out at some point as well. So yeah, that'll do it for this Tomes of Terror book review, and I will see you guys on the next one. Bye.